and the sound of Mama's cigarette lighter when she snaps it open. It's so quiet. You can even hear the tiny whiff sounds my hair makes when it hits the brick veranda floor. I sit there and feel all their eyes focused just on me. Carol lifts my hair and snips and touches my head, and I kind of float away from the veranda into the trees. When I open my eyes, 15 inches of my hair is on the brick floor. Carol hands me the mirror and says, "Voila!" When I look at myself, I resemble the pictures of Heidi's friend, Peter. I don't even look like a girl. My chest closes up. I feel all naked. I feel like they've cut off my legs or my arms, not just my hair. "You are magnificent," Mama says, and jumps up from her chair to examine me. She ruffles her hands through my hair, and I can feel her fingernails against my scalp. My head is so bare. It's like she could push her fingernails down into my skull if she wanted and leave permanent dents. Her cigarette smoke curls around me, and I can smell the lime in her drink. "You have never looked better," she pronounces. "My God, you are gorgeous. Caro, you are an artist." Then she says, "Little Shep, go find a broom and trash can and sweep up this mess." And she gestures to my cut-off hair like it's dog poop under our feet. Carol winks at me and says, "Sit up. Get ready, darling. The boys are going to really come sniffing around now." Miss Lucille doesn't say anything. She just stares at me like she wants to ask a question. "Do you like it, Miss Lucille?" I ask her.
"What does it matter what I think?" she says. "What does it matter what anybody thinks? About anything."
I look down at my reddish-brown hair lying on the bricks. The bricks and my hair are about the same color. I can feel tiny bits of hair sticking to my skin, like they don't want to let go of my body. I get up and stand in front of the fan and lift up the back of my shirt to try and let the hair blow off me. My hair has been long since I was a real little girl, and without it, I feel cockeyed and dizzy, like losing the weight of my hair has thrown me off balance. I was used to how I had looked for so long and how my hair felt when I reached up to roll it between my fingers. When I was alone, I used to hold a clump of my hair and just smell it, and that would make me feel good because it was my smell, and it made me feel more there. I stand by the fan and try to get used to the new me. Why did I lie and say I was tired of my hair, when really it was the main thing about me that I loved? I ruin everything, I think. I ruin it all. I feel like crying, but I can't. I brought this all on myself. Baylor, who was sitting on the steps watching the whole thing, gets up and does something that surprises me. He bends down and picks up a lock of my hair and puts it in his pocket. He looks at it and smells it and puts it in his pocket. Mama watches him and says, "My youngest has always been a little strange." Miss Lucille says, "I see nothing strange about him whatsoever." And she walks into her house and comes back out with an envelope that she hands to Baylor.
"Here," she says, "you can keep it in this."
"Thank you, Miss Lucille," he says very seriously.
Then he reaches into his pocket, takes out my hair, and places it in the gray envelope that has Lucille Romaine, Cane River, Nacogdoches, Louisiana, embossed on it. I say, "Bay, why are you doing that?" He mumbles, "It's not really for me. It's for someone else." And I say to my little brother, "Where do you come from?" The sun is setting by then. Miss Lucille lights some mosquito torches, and the smell drifts through the air, covering up all the other smells. She turns on the veranda lamps and hands Mama and Caro some 612 to rub on. Miss Lucille says,
"Here, Vivi, let me rub some on your back. That's where those damn things always get me, right under my bra."
and she sticks her hand under Mama's shirt and smears on some insect repellent, and then they get out the card so they can really start having a party. Not too long afterward, Lulu comes down the stairs from her nap.
"I'm hungry," she says. "I'm starving."
When she sees me, she seems confused, like she isn't completely sure who I am. There is never anything to eat at Miss Lucille's, so we just go into her kitchen and scrounge around till we find some crackers and anchovy paste and a little leftover tonic. The whole time, Little Shep and Baylor and Lulu keep staring at my hair. Finally, Little Shep says,
"Sitta, you look like a mop."
Baylor says, "City, can we put your hair back on?" It gets dark, and it looks like nobody is going anywhere. So the four of us watch TV for a long time in Miss Lucille's den. Finally, we get tired and turn it off and fall asleep on the couch and chairs. I don't know how long we doze, but I'm the first one to smell it. I yell, "Y'all get up! Something's burning!" We all run out to the veranda, and we find the ladies screaming and screaming, going crazy everywhere because the trash can filled with my hair is on fire. Mama is standing there with an empty ashtray in her hand. Carol says, "You fool, you should never have emptied that. I hadn't stubbed my ciggy out yet." "Well," Mama says, "I was getting sick of looking at all those damn dead butts." The three of them just stand there staring at the blazing trash can, amazed, like it is more than they can ever cope with. I can taste anchovy in my mouth, and I wish I could brush my teeth. The smell of my hair on fire is awful. I did not know that something cut off of me could really smell that bad. Little Shep runs into the kitchen and comes back with a decanter full of water. He dumps it into the can, and the fire goes out. Just like that. Miss Lucille says,
"Oh, it is so good to have a man around the house. Now, let's all just take a couple of Bufferin, spray a little perfume out here, and everything will be fine."
We spend the night at Miss Lucille's without even calling Daddy. I wake up real early the next morning before anybody else opens their eyes. My hand shoots straight up to my head where my hair used to be. I miss it. I want it back. I don't look in any of the mirrors. I rub my hands across my scalp. My hair feels more like a hat than hair, like it is a bird's head, not my own. I walk out into the yard, and there is still dew on the grass, although you can tell the day will be another scorcher. I go out behind the cedars and over by the crepe myrtles. I stand there for a minute, feeling far away from everything, because it's still so early. Then I lie down on the grass. It's cool and damp, and it itches and feels good at the same time. I can see the sky above me just coming to light, and the fringes of the cedars and all the pink of the crepe myrtles. There aren't any bugs or mosquitoes, nothing to bite me. I lie on my back in the grass for a long time, and then I turn over and lie on my stomach. My heart starts pounding, my breath gets real tight, and I get all afraid. But I can feel the ground underneath me, and I tell myself the earth is holding me up. I am lighter than I was before. My hair is like grass planted on the top of my head. If I can just wait long enough, maybe it will grow back in some other season. Part 2, Willetta's Witness.
Willetta, 1990. Miss Vivis started getting holy on us after her and Mr. Big Shep done had the big fight. I knew something was going on that night when me and Chaney was sitting out on the porch. It was back when Chaney still smoked those devil L&Ms, before I give him the ultra tomato. Before I told him, "You drink and smoke any more round here, you can find your 10-cent self another bed to sleep in. You hear me, Peckerwood?" We was sitting out on the porch when Miss Vivi fly out that brick house with all them four children. yelling, packing them in that pinky-gray T-Bird, revving up that motor, scratching out the driveway in the dark of night, heading up the road to town. "Where's she going?" I asked Janey. "It must be 10 o'clock at night. Them children got school tomorrow." He said, "Little, mind your own business." I tell him those children is my business. He say, "Oh, keep still. White people act like that sometime. Maybe she gonna go buy her some cigarettes." "Ain't no stores open now," I tell him. This was back when stores still closed up at 5 o'clock. You want something late at night, you just wait for it. Ooh, I wanted to sass Cheney something bad. Tell him, "Oh, I forgot, Mr. King Know-It-All. You know everything there is about white people." But I held my tongue that time. Cheney a good man. He just trying to roll with the punches. That my Cheney's motto. You got to roll with the punches. So I walk myself down the lane, act like I just looking up at the sky. And before I know it, Miss Vivi just roaring right back into the driveway like her hair on fire. Must have turned round right at the end of Pecan Road. Herding all four of them children back in the house. It was a starry night, and City was standing there on the edge of the driveway holding something in her hand, just crying and crying. Had on that white sweater with the dogs on it her cousin handed down. I bet I know just the nightie she had on underneath it, 'cause I done Clorox, line dried, and folded it in her drawer just that afternoon. I knowed every pair of little panties that child had. I could see her 'cause the carport light was still on. I don't reckon she could see me, standing at the edge of the field in all that darkness. But I was there. I would have gone to her, only I'd be scared what her mama gonna do. People be sticking their nose up in Ms. Vivian Walker's business. She cut it right off. I seen her do it to them children's aunts. Seen her do it later to Ms. Niecy when she got on her about the drinking in the morning. Then, like I tell you, Miss Vivi stick her head out the kitchen door and yell, "You get your butt in this house, Siddle Lee Walker, before I give you something to cry about." And I hear that tone in her voice all full up with being mad and I don't know what all. Things happened before her children was even born. I seen her when Mr. Big Shep first brung her out to Pecan Grove and they was courting. Ooh, she was pretty. Tiny little waist, all that curly hair and those hats. But she was mad even back then. I could smell it like when a hurricane be moving in. When I witness how that woman treat her children, I start getting myself over to that brick house earlier than she want me, just so I can check on my city. Miss Vivi be up in that front room saying to her little daughter, "Shut up and stand still. I'm not letting you go to divine compassion with your hair looking like a 2-bit Susie." And City wasn't but what, 6, 7 years old, standing in front of that armoire mirror, and Miss Vivi jerking on her long red hair so hard she liked to pull it out in clumps right off the child's head. That child squirm and her mama slap her, say, "You're just tender-headed. You damn redheads are too tender-headed." Well, I had me 2 little nappy-headed girl children of my own, and they was just as tender-headed as City. And nary a one of them got no red hair. No, ma'am. Miss Vivi be jerking her child around just to make her cry. Just to be mean. She's jealous of that girl's hair, always has been. Her own hair got all thin-like after she had them 4 babies, 5, counting her twin that the Lord done took. She used to get her head fixed at Mr. Julian's over by the city park, but he quit using her hairspray, say it caused cancer. So she switched to Ms. Janine, who she just loved, 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 but you know that don't last long. Miss Vivi in love with you one day and drop you like a hot potato the next. I say, Miss Vivi, you got your hands full trying to get these children off to school in the morning. Let me fix Miss City's hair. Her hands be all shaky. But she say, you don't know a damn thing about hair, letter. Now go do the breakfast dishes, then start on that hand washing. And City be catching my eye in the mirror like she trying to thank me. But there ain't one single thing I can do to stop her head from hurting before she catch her bus up to the nun's school. Don't you know I was feeling it all in my heart, watching, just standing there watching, wanting to tell that woman, that ain't how you raise no child. But I work for Miss Vivi. Me and Chaney live on their place. I have my own two children to think about, their clothes, their hair ribbons, their teeth. The morning after Miss Vivi done took off in the T-Bird and rolled back, she tell me first thing, Letta, you get in Mr. Big Ship's room and haul out every single thing of mine. I'm not sleeping with that son of a bitch again as long as I live. Not if he's dying of a heart attack and holding out a $1 million bill in his hand. Well, she done said this sort of thing to me before, when we done went and ripped all the gold his monograms off their anniversary bath towels and writ shithead on them with magic markers. That was the time he took off wild turkey hunting in Texas, just when she was throwing that big 40th birthday party for Miss Teensy. She had done hired a little combo and all, and set up men to tend bar and park cars and what all, and Mr. Big Ship, he up and left to go shooting turkeys. We done ruined all his towels. Then she had me hang them in the bathroom right where he'd walk in and spot them. Then me and her went in the deep freeze with the freezer marker and scrawled crap all over his frozen duck and deer meat he done put up. That was a shame, 'cause you couldn't even see the date when that game was killed. When that man got home, he give all that meat to Chaney and me. Us thawed it out and had a big cook-up. Our people thought we done hit the jackpot. Everybody be sitting round the table smiling, saying, ooh, this the best crap I ever ate. Yeah. Oh, when Miss Vivi ain't calling Mr. Big Shep her lover man, she calling him poor excuse. That what she say? He a damn poor excuse for a man. But it sure looked like she mean business with this bedroom move. I had to move out all her lingerie and makeup from the dresser, and all her pretty whatnot she done collected from all over. And she said, Letta, you can take that picture of Mr. Shep and me at Pat O'Brien's and stuff it where the sun don't shine. I like to say, don't you be talking like that to me. But of course I don't say nothing, no how. If it's one thing I learnt in this life, it's to bite my tongue when I got to, and yell when I don't. Chaney and me been living at Pecan Grove all the time since we done been married. He been here even before that, working for Mr. Big Shep and his daddy, Mr. Baylor Sr. We used to live in them two-room shotgun houses on the bayou. Falling down steps, newspaper on the walls. You had to walk through the bedroom to get to the kitchen. And that outhouse, woo lordy. Having to sprinkle that lime around and all them flies, and it'd be stinking to high heaven. And me having to get myself out there in the middle of the night when I was carrying Ruby and Pearl and peeing all the time. That's where we lived when I first come here from my mama's house. Then Mr. Big Ship, he move us out of them houses and put us in these new little white houses with the indoor plumbing and the attic fan and my good-sized kitchen you can sit down in. Oh, yeah. Chaney been working with Mr. Big Ship every day of God's world and me up to the brick house cleaning and cooking and caring for them children ever since City done left her mama's belly. I'm the one drove Miss Vivi to St. Cecilia's to have Little Shep because Mr. Big Shep was out at the duck camp. But the times I try to say something in that house seemed like it just made things worse. So I bite my tongue till it liked to bleed. It took Miss Vivi a couple of weeks to get all the way holy after she started going down talking to that pig-faced priest. The one who wore that big fat emerald ring. That man looked like a mean cat to me is all I have to say. I don't care whether he a man of God or not. Times he come over and track mud all over my clean tile floor right after I done finished my mopping. Couldn't even be bothered to wipe his feet on the mat like the mud on his shoes was the mud of Christ. And we'd be lucky to have some of it. Mr. Big Shep don't even do that. I had to stop myself from taking a broom to that priest and whomping him upside the leg. But Miss Vivi be talking to him every day and reading a book he give her on the life of the saints. We don't have that book at the Good Shepherd Temple where my daughter Pearl sing in the choir. That Pearl got the sweetest voice in the world. She my jewel. She my little Mahalia Jackson Jr. I never laid my eyes on that book till that pig-faced priest brung it into the brick house. I opened it one day when I was in Miss Vivi's room dusting, and I like to get sick to my stomach. Pictures up in there of a man with all his insides getting pulled out by a wheel, and a blind woman holding her eyeballs up on a plate like she be offering you snack. This the kind of trash that man bring into the house? Like the Walker family ain't got enough trouble already. Then Miss Vivi start her going to mass every morning and acting like she be praying all day long, making up her lists of what be a sin and what not be a sin. And she all the time be lining it up for you, like to wear me out. She say, "Letta, it's a sin for you to wear that wig Cheney got you because it makes you vain." Now, I done love that wig. I asked Cheney to buy it for me at Crest because it got them shiny swirls in the front that do just right. You just slip it on and walk out the house, look like you straight out of the magazines. And she tell me it a sin the way I watch my stories on the TV while I fold the clothes. I told her I gotta keep up with Julie and Doug on Days of Our Lives. They be up to something new all the time. One day he's singing to her, call her beautiful lady love, and the next day she be throwing him out the house because he still be wanting Hope, his old wife. Even though Hope got her amnesia living in another city and done forgot all about him. I done been watching that story for years and years, and then Miss Vivi come and tell me it all filled with impurity and what have you. But what really got me is when she done start up listing sins for the children. Her baby Baylor only 4 years old, and she telling him it a sin if he make any smacking noise at all when he be eating his food. That child already got trouble swallowing. I seen it with my own eyes. I fixed that boy a little ham sandwich and a Coke, and when he try to swallow, that bread gets stuck up in his throat. He try working it down, but his little throat so tight he just have to spit that food out. He'd look up at me like he in trouble and say, "Letta, may I please be excused?" Like to break my heart into a million pieces right there on that breakfast room floor. Only thing he can get down is smashed bananas with cream, and I feed him more of that than a child ought to eat. Can't a woman see what she doing to her own blood children is what I want to know. Then Miss Vivi done gone and proclaimed it a sin for Miss Lulu to sit up in front of the bathroom mirror with her candy cigarettes pretending she had a cocktail party. And that girl start eating on her hair again, something I ain't never seen in a child before or since. Miss Vivi told Mr. Little Shrap he can't go near his cowboy boots 'cause they sinful footwear. Well, I got my own thought about what kind of church says boots be sinful. Don't you get me started. All in all, though, Sidney be the one taking the holy business the worst, 'cause she always trying to do like her mama anyway. Sidney start listing what is a sin for her own self. Don't even wait for her mama to do it. She just finds something she enjoy, then she decide it gotta be a sin, and she start feeling all bad about it. She tell me later, I can't go outside and play on the pecan tree swing anymore because I'm putting that swing before God, and that is a mortal sin. I be thinking maybe they got a different God than mine. I say, Miss Sidney, baby girl, that ain't no sin. That just swinging under the Lord's blue sky. But she say, no, I can't swing anymore. And she sit inside the house and look out the den windows while Miss Vivi up in her bedroom, what used to be the children's schoolroom, fingering them prayer beads. Sometimes Sidney be crying in a room off by herself, and I go in and ask her, baby, what is wrong? And she say, I'm asking God to forgive me for thinking unkind thoughts. That brick house is got to be the saddest place in the state of Louisiana, I tell Cheney when I get home. That place ain't nothing but a big, air-conditioned house of sadness. And would you believe Miss Vivi done got that pig-faced priest to bring her one of them prayer needlers into her new bedroom where them children used to have their desks and blackboards? And she brought her a white statue of that Virgin Mary. Two more things for me to dust. Then Miss Vivi, she gone to the Catholic bookstore and bought herself a big old huge picture of that same Mary with them eyes following you all over the place. I don't care where you standing in that bedroom, that old virgin be looking at you. They not the eyes I want following me, nuh-uh. I guess the way I shut my eyes every time I passes that picture. I just do my dusting and vacuuming and get myself out. And Miss Vivi quit her singing like she always used to do. Used to. She be belting out, oh, what a beautiful morning it was. And she be singing how she gotta love one man till she die. All them tunes what she used to love. Oh, she'd sing those songs all the time, putting on her makeup, or laying out dresses for Sidney and Lulu to wear to birthday parties. She loved to sing, that woman did. She'd clear her throat, say, damn filthy cigarettes, then she'd sing some more. Also, Miss Vivi even quit playing bourrée with her yah-yahs for 2-3 months. She say Mr. Big Shep forbid her to have anything to do with them, but I think she done made it all up in her head. I think she punishing herself 'cause she don't have faith that the good Lord gonna hold her up. She don't know nothing about the Lord of mercy. Ain't nothing the same round that house since she done cut her foot all bad, got on them crutches and had that fight with Mr. Big Shep. I didn't see the fight. But I was in that house the next morning, and I've been round them two long enough to know how they can do each other. Somehow hitting a Jack Daniels bottle still ain't no sin in that house, though. Used to be Miss Vivi wouldn't start up till 3 o'clock just before the children come home from the bus stop. But then she start making herself them little what they call mimosas first thing in the morning. She poured in a cup, so I think she drinking coffee. I got news for her. You don't have no ice cubes chinking the side of no coffee cup. Chink, chink, chink. That the sound in that house. Chink, chink, chink. And the sound of that big old central air conditioner whirring all the time. By the time I get to my stories, she already done had her few. Not so no one else can tell. but I know how her voice dip down and get all relaxed the way it do when she drinking. Oh, yeah. She might quit a few days here and there, but she gain 1 or 2 pounds, then she get right back on the sauce. She say her drinking keep her weight down. She say she the same size 6 she was in high school. And if she get fat, she gonna pay the yayas to shoot her. But she's still announcing to everyone she ain't touched a drop of whiskey since Mardi Gras. Uh-huh. I keep my lip zipped is what I do. See, one time, I gone to her when she was in the den sitting on the window seat with her saint's book. Cheney done laid a fire for her, even though it wasn't cold outside. She cranks up that central air condition, and I don't care if it's 90 degrees outside, she announced to everyone that she need a fire. That's what Miss Vivi always say when she be wanting something. I need it. She looked calm-like, so I says, Miss Vivi, I've been working for you more than 10 years, and you know I wouldn't do nothing to hurt this family. I know that will let her, she say. And I tell her, I don't mean no disrespect to the Walkers. Y'all been good to me and my family, but something bad wrong going on in this house, Miss Vivi. She drag on a cigarette and say, oh, don't I know, Letta, don't I know. There is more sin in this house than anyone will ever be forgiven for. Well, I don't know about that, I tell her. But your children is getting mighty shook up the way you and Mr. Big Shep be carrying on. Can't you two say I'm sorry and let bygones be bygone? She don't move from the window seat. Just look out the window like she gonna get an answer from the sky. Then she look at me all blank-faced like I be a stranger. Look at me like we haven't been in that house together 6 days a week for 10... going on 11 years, like we ain't cleaned up those children together when they been throwing up from the flu. She look at me like I'm a nigger off a street, and she say, well, Letta, you are a maid in this house. You are not a confessor. You are not a friend. You are a maid. Do not ever give me advice about how to handle my life again as long as you live. Do I make myself clear? Yes'm, I tell her. You real clear, you clear as can be. And then I gone outside and hung sheets on the line. It was a good day for laundry, lots of wind, and not too cloudy. I swore to keep my mouth shut after that, never open it up again. All I could do was stand on the edge of that driveway and watch. Try to let them children know I was there, even if it was only with my prayers. Especially Sidney. She start up with her asthma, and 3-4 times Cheney and me had to take her up to St. Cecilia's. She get it at night, after Miss Vivi and Mr. Big Shep done passed out from drinking. I thank God they was out, 'cause if they was to try and drive in the shape they was in, that girl wouldn't need no oxygen, 'cause she would have been dead in a car wreck. Baylor, the one who called us up, I taught him our number as soon as he could count. 3390. I get him to sing with me and show him the numbers on the dial phone. That was way before you had your push-button emergency. He called, so me and Cheney go up to the house to get Sidney. She be wheezing and holding her chest and that long red hair all tangled up in her face, and she be holding on to me. And I say, just take it easy, baby girl. You gonna be all right. I put her in the truck between Cheney and me, and all I can do is rub her back, see can I get her to calm down. Half the time she got red belt whelps on her ankles and legs. And Lord, I don't want to even think what kind of marks she got under her little nighty. But those doctors at St. Cecilia, they don't say nothing about them marks. They know she missed a big ship's and Miss Vivi's child. They just hook her up on the oxygen and give her a shot. Ain't nobody in this town gonna say nothing to nobody about the way they raise their children. Back home in bed, I lay up next to Cheney. I be crying. And he say, Letta, you're doing all you can. My own two girls, Pearl and Ruby, already in they bed asleep, breathing regular. They my little ones, but I spend more time rearing the Walker children than I do my own babies, and that is the good Lord's truth. Times I had to leave them by themselves with 102-degree fever 'cause Miss Vivi be having one of her dinner parties. Walking up to that brick house to help serve court bouillon when my babies be coughing and laying at home with hot little foreheads. Make me want to hit that white woman. And where's Mr. Big Shep most all the time after the big fight? Out at the duck camp, leaving Cheney and the rest of the workers to run Pecan Grove. Cheney say, Boss man don't know his crops from a hole in the ground these days. He don't look out. He gonna lose everything he done put in the ground. Well, ain't none of us want that to happen. All of us eating the same gumbo round here, one way or the other. This is how Miss Vivi done gone too far with the holy thing. She left me staying with the children and gone off to a retreat in Arkansas with that pig-faced priest and a bunch of other Catholic women, nary a one of them a yaw-yaw. She come back after 3 days, had lost 6 or 7 pounds, and her hands were shaking like Mexican jumping beans, telling me she hadn't touched a drop since she reached the Mississippi state line. Something about her eyes make me wish she had been drinking, 'cause I ain't never seen her look that head up. She say, Letta, you go on home. I'm back now. I'll take care of my children. They was in the den watching the TV. Little Shep had his little plastic gun thing what makes his name tags that he put on everything. That boy loved putting his name on things. City had on her false fingernails that she loved. Lulu eating her Oreos, sitting up next to her big sister on the couch. Baylor, he holding that old doll of Lulu's with the bald head. They all lounging, all laid up. Don't even get up to greet them, Mama. Not 'cause they bad, just 'cause they be relaxing. I should have never left out the house that day. I had a bad feeling up in my joints. But you can't look back. Good Lord didn't mean for us to hate ourselves. He made us to love ourselves like he do, with wide open arms. I gone on home like she tell me. Cheney was in the rocker, and Pearl and Ruby was plaiting each other's hair, sticking in the little plastic barrettes I done bought 'em at Crass. Cheney had started some collards and cornbread the way we like on Sunday evenings. I've been lucky, 'cause they's most men won't lift a finger to help you out round the house. I gone in and drew me a bath with my cowl gone and was soaking when Cheney yelled out, Letta, come on out to the porch. What in Sam Hill is going on, I say? Ain't no rest for the weary. I grab my robe and run out to the porch, and Cheney point to the Walker yard and say, Look over there. I done heard them children screaming before my eye even seen what was going on. All 4 of my babies lined up against the wall of that brick house, and every one of them buck naked. Miss Vivi out there with a belt, whooping them like horses. And them just standing against the red brick, yelling and crying and screaming, but not even trying to get away from her. Standing there, letting her beat the living daylights out of them like there'd be some big invisible wall round them. Why are they not running away? I should have taught them to run. Me and Cheney watch it all, and what we supposed to do? We got jobs and a place to live, and Miss Vivi is Mr. Big Shep's wife. She a white woman. She can do whatever she want. I hear City's voice over the others. She be screaming, Mama, don't hit Baylor. Don't hit him, Mama, please. And I say to Cheney, You think I'm going to stand out here and watch the children I raised get beat to death? He say, You won't lose what jobs we got. You got somewhere else for us to live, nigger woman. I look at him and say, "The good Lord provideth. You call me nigger woman again, you gonna end up with a voice higher than rubies." Cheney go and sit on the porch steps. He ain't moving. Say, "Ain't my business." Pearl and Ruby come out on the porch. They watching too. Cheney look at him. He look up at me. I head over to his truck and the girls start trailing along. Cheney, he stand up and say, "Pearl, Ruby, y'all go on back inside." Then he finally move hisself, like I knowed he would. He get behind the wheel and we fly down the lane. Sunday dust blowing ever which away, settling on my skin, still wet from my bath. I be praying out loud, "Heavenly Father, you gotta guide our hands, you gotta guide our feet. Please tell us what to do in these white people's yard." Cheney don't even use they driveway. He pulls straight up on the lawn where she beating on him. And that truck hardly come to a halt before I jump out, run over to Miss Vivi, say, "Stop it, you hear? Stop that! You leave them children alone!" And she turn like she planning to whoop up on me, too. She swing out with that belt and hit me round my elbow. But I got on my robe where them children ain't wearing a stitch. Cheney, he reach up and grab that belt out of her hand. Say, "Miss Viva Ann, you gotta stop behaving like this." And she go for him, trying to slap and kick him. "You filthy nigger," she yelled, "don't you dare touch me. I will have your black ass fired off this place before you can spit." But Cheney, he a big, strong man, and he grab her hands and hold them together, and she still kicking and yelling, but she not doing no more harm to anyone. Their babies all crying, they bleeding, and City, oh City, she done wet all over herself. Lulu be eating on her hair like she do. Little Shep trying to act like nothing done happen, like he a little bit daddy. Like he got important business to tend to somewhere else. And Bela be all blue-faced from holding his breath. I get hold of him and say, "Breathe now, baby, breathe. Sweet Jesus." I seen their whole lives in front of them, how they would be when they was grown. I seen it all just by looking at them right that minute in that yard. And it done froze my blood. I put him in the truck, and Cheney let go of Miss Vivi. He jump in with us, and he drive down the lane to our house. I be thinking, maybe Miss Vivi might come after us. But she just stayed standing in that yard, looking out at the fields like we never been nowhere around. It was the first time I seen the truth. That woman ain't just a drunk. She crazy as a Betsy bug. I call up Miss Buggy, Miss Vivi's mama, tell her she better come on over. And then I wash the blood off them children's little white bodies, trying to be careful as I can round what that belt done did to 'em. Take my what they call burn plant and pat on some of its juice. All the time praying, "Lord, Lord, come down and help these little ones." I put them in some of Pearl and Ruby's clothes, even though little Shep, he starts to crying and crying, saying, "I don't want to look like a sissy. I can't wear these. I want my clothes." He don't stop crying. Now he worse off than any of them. I set them down round the kitchen table, and I don't know what is going to happen next. My own two girls staring at them Walker children with their mouths hanging open. I say, "Ruby and Pearl, babies, y'all close y'all mouths before they get full up with flies." Ruby say to City, "You look funny in my dress." I say, "Shush, Ruby, don't you go making fun of this child right now." I be thinking, what in the good Lord's world gonna happen to us all at Pecan Grove? Mr. Big Shep fire us. I don't know where we gonna go. It ain't easy to find jobs like we got in 1963 Louisiana. City's false fingernails hanging off, and she gnawing on her own bit-down nails, and she asks me, Letta, is it a sin for us to be over here when Mama is over there by herself? I pull her to me, trying to be careful, because I know her skin'd be raw. I tell her, I don't want to hear you worrying yourself no more about what be a sin. You hear me, baby girl? I stand up and tell all them, just sit there. Let her gonna fix y'all some cornbread and milk. My own daughters be holding on to me over by the stove, acting like they scared of white children in our house. I forget that I knows these walkers inside out, but my own children ain't hardly never been round them. Pearl, she finally go get her and Ruby's coloring book and a coffee can of Crayola pieces and put them on the table. Baylor, he start the coloring. He crying out the side of his eyes, but coloring all the same. Miss Buggy finally come and get him. She say, now, Letta and Cheney, I don't want a word of this to go any further than this house. Y'all hear me? Miss Vivian is just upset with all she has on her mind. Miss Vivian has just been pushed too far by that Baptist husband of hers. Don't you ever repeat any of this. I tells her, yes'm. And she take off to a house up by City Park with them children in her fail lane. And I ain't never forgot it, not even when I look down at that old woman in her casket. She ain't never thought to send back my own two babies' clothes what I had dressed them four Walker children in. What did she do with them clothes? Turn them into dust rags? I still wish I knowed. This is something will haunt me when I pray, something I can't forgive. That evening, I took myself to our prayer service at Good Shepherd Temple, and my church sisters come up and was so sweet to me. My best girlfriend, Lucinda, hugged me to her like she do, with that big self of hers that's shorter than me by foot, but full and brown and smell like warm biscuits. I just let her hug me, there in the back of the church, and I could hear them all singing. I got me a good church home. They look out for you when you're in need. Mr. Big Shep, he never fired us, never said nothing at all. He come round the next week with a mess of ducks already cleaned for me and Cheney to eat. Then later he give Cheney his gold El Camino. Said he was getting himself a new Ford anyway and wanted Cheney to have the El Camino. So we had us two vehicles that could have took us anywhere we wanted to go. We could have drove off Pecan Grove, straight out of the heart of Louisiana to some other state, and never come back. But even though I ain't a big one for counting sins, leaving out of here would have been a sin in my book. 'Cause some people God give to you to look out after, and that just be how it is. I gotta keep my gaze on them children till the day I die. Too many things can happen in the blink of an eye, and that's why I count my blessings every single day. That's why I told my girls, that's why I tell my grandchildren, don't ever worry about being holy, baby child. Just keep your eyes wide open, except when you sleep. Then, let the Lord's mighty vision see you through the night.
Snuggling.
Little Shep, 1990. Mama didn't fool me. Oh, yeah, she tried, saying, I'm gonna shrivel up and blow away if you don't give me some snuggles. I believed her at first. Thought she was actually going to kick the bucket if I didn't snuggle with her right when she wanted. I thought she'll die, and they'll say it was my fault. They'll say he killed his mother because he wouldn't hug and kiss her like she wanted. He wouldn't let her rub that cold cream face against his. Wouldn't let that cotton nightgown float around him, smelling like her skin. I still can't take the smell of cold cream on a woman. Just a whiff is enough to start up one of the migraines. First thing I noticed when my wife Kane and I got together was how clean her face smells when she gets in bed. She never uses any cream at all. Washes her face with plain old soap and puts maybe a dab of baby oil around her eyes. That's it. I give her 3 pair of silk pajamas for her birthday every year. Before we got married, I told her, please don't ever wear a cotton nightgown around me, and I promise I won't pick my nose at the table. And Kane said, you got a deal, Shep. Mama acted like it was all normal, you know, like it was her right. I'm not sure what all she did with Sitta and the others. I just know what she did with me. They moved Bela out of my room when I was in 3rd grade. They added on to the house so we could each have our own private cell. No wonder she wanted to have us all in separate rooms. That way there wouldn't be but one at a time to witness what she was up to. My room was right across the hall from the bathroom next to Sitta's. I would lay in my bed at night and hear Mama doing a nightly whatever in the bathroom. The woman spent hours on her face. I could tell exactly when she was finished because of the way she'd tap her toothbrush against the sink and then clear her throat. God, I hated those sounds. Then she'd pad down the hall and say, good night, Mr. Walker, and Daddy would grunt something back, if he was even home. After that, she'd go into Sitta's room. I didn't want to, but sometimes I couldn't help but hear them. My hearing was already bad in my left ear by then. It took the doctors a while to diagnose it, but finally they said, you've lost 83% of the hearing in your left ear. Claimed it was from early exposure to guns and loud farm equipment. I could have told them exactly what it was, though. I made the hearing go out of that ear because it's the one that faced the wall when I tried to sleep. I got tired of hearing all the shit you had to listen to in that house. If Sitta convinced Mama she was already sleeping, or if the bitch hadn't gotten enough, the old lady would come into my room, and then it would start up. I would kill someone before I let that kind of shit happen to Kurt or Dory. Kane and me never let them sleep with us, not even when they were tiny. I never crawl into bed with either one of my children. I've been careful from the beginning to watch how I hug 'em, kiss 'em, touch 'em. Kane had to talk me into helping bathe 'em. She had to tell me it was okay. One evening I stood in the doorway and watched her while she lathered 'em up in the tub, the little ducks and boats floating in the water, Kurt's hair all slicked back and Dory's chubby little arms. It was all warm and misty in the bathroom, and Kane had her sleeves rolled up and her hair in a ponytail. She just looked so damn competent, so damn normal. But I didn't want to go near the kids while they were naked. Finally, Kane got up and put a washcloth in my hand. She said, Shep, it's all right. Go bathe your children. You're not going to break them. Kane only knows part of what went on at Pecan Grove. Sometimes I'd like to tell her more, but you just never do know how people are going to react to things. What was so sickening was the way Mama'd root herself down under the covers and say, let's snuggle. I need to snuggle. Anytime my mother wanted anything, she'd say, I need it. Then she expected people to give it to her, like it was her fucking right, like the right to water or food or air. She'd sucker me into it by saying, little Shep, let me tickle your back. Well, I was a goner whenever anybody tickled my back. It worked like a drug on me. How in the world I kept on letting myself fall for it, though, I can't explain. She'd start out tickling my back with her fingernails the way I craved, and just when I'd be drifting off, she'd start kissing me, and her hand would start wandering. Hell, it makes me want to puke just thinking about it. I wonder how it was for the rest of them. Was it just the same? Did she do the same thing with Bela? I know there was that one time out at the duck camp when Bela and I had a little too much to drink and we got to talking about sex. Now he has got some problems. After he'd had 4 or 5 scotches that evening, he told me, bro, most of the time I can't even get it up. When I do, I just want to do it and get it over with. You tell anyone I just said that, and I'll call you a bald-faced liar. I told him, hell, Kane wouldn't stand for that kind of stuff. She laid down the law to me about no drinking at home, and I flat-out had to toe the line. If I acted like that in bed, she'd kick my butt out of the house. Bela lit a cigarette and looked at me. We were sitting out on the porch, and I was cleaning my fingernails with my pocket knife. He said, "You clean your nails just like the old man." Said it to me like it was an insult. "Yeah, little brother," I said, "but at least I still want to get it on." "Yeah," he said, "except when you're knocked out with a migraine." Bela can be pretty damn depressing sometimes. Before that conversation ended, he told me he was actually thinking about getting hormone shots. A walker man actually talking about hormone shots. Anyway, here's what finally did it for me. I got a crush on B.B. Crowell. God, she was the prettiest girl in sixth grade. Hair down to her waist, with these pink ribbons laced through it. Cute little nose and long eyelashes. That girl was born flirting. I adored her. I would have done anything for B.B. Crowell. At the Catholic youth dances when we danced together, just smelling her was as good as Christmas. I'd be wearing an Oxford cloth shirt, cords, and matching socks, clean ears, and a dab of canoe. Ready for action, man. People will never understand how sexy those Catholic youth dances could be. Hormones zinging all over that parish hall. We'd try to get our bodies as close as possible before the Nazi chaperones came around, pulling us apart from each other, saying, "Let's see some daylight between you two." Every boy in the whole place drooled to dance with B.B. Crowell. I had to wait my turn, but then one night, I remember it was around in November before the holidays, in sixth grade, she turned down Press Davis for a slow song. Flat out told him no. So I stepped up and asked her to dance with me, and she said yes. Man! Press was a buddy of mine, and I still felt like king of the world. It felt so goddamn powerful to have her choose me. Later that night, Mr. Grémillon dropped me off at home. He was always taking us home from things at night. Mama wouldn't drive across the highway after dark, and the old man was nowhere to be found. It was around 10 o'clock. Sitta was spending the night out, and Lulu and Bela were in the den watching the TV with a fire going, eating oatmeal cookies. I stoked the logs up a little and laid down with them in front of the fire and watched whatever was on screen. But all I saw was B.B.'s face. All I could smell was her fresh sweetness. I wanted to tell someone what had happened to me, but I didn't have the words for it. Everything I laid my eyes on looked good. That whole house looked good. Even my little brother and sister looked less weird than they usually did. We polished off the cookies and turned off the TV. I went to my room, got undressed, and climbed in bed. I could smell the Tide on my pillowcase, and feel how it was sort of crackly from drying on the line outside. B.B. Crowell had chosen me, and man, life was sweet. I laid back in my bed and smiled at the ceiling. Mama came out of her hole after I'd been in bed for 15 minutes or so. She walked in and sat on my bed. I made myself be perfectly still so she'd think I was already asleep. "How was the dance, little Shep?" she said, like I was about 5 years old. I thought, "Not tonight, Mama, not tonight." She said, "Now don't you try and play possum with me. I know you're not asleep." I rolled over and looked at her. She had on that pink cotton nightgown with the tiny flowers embroidered on the collar. I could make out those gargantuan breasts of hers hanging underneath. I know those breasts, and I hate them. She looked at me and whispered, "Give me a hug, little Shep. Give me a hug and a kiss." Automatically, I sat up and hugged her. She squeezed back real hard, and I could feel those breasts against my chest. I felt like throwing up. And then the tingling at my temples that comes just before a headache starts up. Out of nowhere, I thought, "I hate her. I hate her guts." The thought was sharp as a piece of glass. It felt great. Made me excited, like doing a cutaway off the high dive for the first time. I broke the hug and laid back down. The bitch stared at my chest. She said, "My God, before long you'll be getting hair on this chest." Then she reached down and started to rub a hand across one of my nipples. She said, "You are so beautiful, Shep. Sometimes I can hardly believe you're mine." Then all the thoughts went out of my head. It was simply my body doing exactly what it wanted to. I clamped my hand over her claw. At first she thought I was being affectionate, that I actually wanted to hold her fucking hand. But then, when she tried to move her fingers to continue her rubbing, I tightened my grasp over her hand as hard as I could. At first she looked confused. Then she giggled. I kept squeezing as tight as I could, like I had one of those fist grip exercises in my hand. I stared straight at her. She tried her whining like a little girl. "Little Shep," she said, "let go of my hand. Pretty please." I squeezed even harder. I was hurting her, I could tell. She said, "Quit it, that's too rough." I said, "Then get off of my bed, mother. Go back to your own bed. Get out of my room, and don't ever come back here unless I say you can." Man, I thought it before, somewhere in the back of my mind, but I'd never said anything like that out loud. It was the power of B.B. Crowell. It was the tiny little bit of down on B.B.'s cheek, that light little dusting of soft blonde hair on her skin, like on a peach, like the sun had kissed her and left this little blonde fuzz behind. I deliberately brushed my cheek against hers during Eleanor Rigby so I could feel it. Mama said, "Don't you ever speak that way to me again as long as you live, Shepley Abbott Walker." I let go of her hand and got up out of the bed. She looked at me in shock. All I had on was my jockeys. I opened my bedroom door and said, "Get out." Daddy wasn't home yet. Lulu and Bayla were already asleep. Sitter was gone. No one could hear us. I was 12 fucking years old. At first, Mama didn't budge from the bed, but when she did, she moved quick. She lunged for me and landed a punch against my rib cage. I didn't hit her back. If I'd have hit her once, I would have never stopped. I would have killed her. I would have gone all the way. She swung her hand back and smacked me hard in the face. Man, I didn't even feel it. It was like I had something protecting me. The slap threw her off balance long enough for me to get out of the room. I didn't go far, just down the hall to the kitchen. I opened the refrigerator and poured a glass of orange juice like I was somebody else's kid in some other house. I could see the refrigerator light spilling on the tile floor. "Just come in here, you bitch," I was thinking. "Just try one more thing with me." I could hear her going into the bathroom. Great, she's taking a pee before she gets out the belt. Then, I couldn't fucking believe the timing. The old man's truck pulled up. I could hear the gravel crunch and the way the sound changed the minute the tires hit the concrete driveway. I stood there with the refrigerator door open, staring at a plate of fried chicken covered with wax paper. The old man stumbled in, drunked up as usual. I could smell the Jack Daniels and cigarette smoke on him. I heard Mama open the bathroom door. She must have heard the old man, too, because she went straight into her bedroom and slammed the door. I could hear her jam in the lock button all the way down the hall. I said, "Hey, Daddy, you want some juice?" Man, I knew the bastard didn't want any juice. I just couldn't think of anything else to say. I was tired. I'd done enough for one night. For once, he didn't start anything. He just said, "Son, you ought to be asleep by now." "Yes, sir," I said. "That's where I'm headed." Back in my room, I could still smell my mother. I opened the window and turned my pillow over to the cool side. "Yes, sir," I should have said. "Why don't you kick in the door of the blue bedroom that used to be our schoolroom and screw your wife so good she's exhausted, laying back with a stupid, silly grin on her face? Why don't the two of y'all have a car wreck off a cliff in Acapulco?" I made my bed up and slept on top of the covers. I didn't sleep on those sheets again till Willetta washed them. And I dreamed about Bebe Crowell. God, Bebe Crowell was perfect. I love my wife, but she's no Bebe Crowell. Bebe Crowell was a sixth-grade goddess. I still dream about her. She was my protector in my room in that brick house on the bayou, that stinking bayou of thick brown water that didn't move. Stagnant water that was full of shit you couldn't see, couldn't guess at, didn't even want to know about.